So as I said at the beginning of the show this afternoon, it's not terribly often that I am approached by you asking specifically for me to deal with a particular subject. Doesn't happen very often. And yet yesterday, following the death of Edith Eger, I must have been contacted, I don't want to exaggerate, probably by four different people saying you need to do a segment on this woman. My problem, though, is I'm not the world's biggest reader. My problem, though, is she was pretty much an unknown quantity to me. I've done a bit of research. I guess I'm in a place where I'm able to have this conversation, but hoping that she'll help me out this afternoon is Batya Bricker, publisher and host of the Bookmark Show at Chai FM. Batya, thank you for chatting to me this afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Simon, and to our listeners. It is indeed, it was big news that Edith Eger passed away yesterday. And I'm so pleased to be talking to you about her. She's worth the conversation.
As I say, it's never happened to me before that four different people have just on their own volition just come to me and said, you have to deal with this issue. Why was she such a remarkable woman, Batya?
Holocaust stories and Holocaust fiction have played such an important role in understanding what the horror was of this terrible time in Jewish history and history in general. Mm-hmm. And it's only through human stories that we're able to really understand the humanity, the enormous cost, the loss, the personal loss that people felt. And you know, we often talk about how there were 6 million Jews killed during the Holocaust. And I remember my history teacher, Mrs. Tanzer, always used to say there were 6 million and one. It's the one that we can relate to. And the thing about Edith Eger was that she only started talking about her story very late in her life. She was busy surviving, quite frankly, and trying to make a new life for herself after Auschwitz, after she survived the Holocaust, and trying to put her life back together. And her books were actually only published, and when I talk about books, the book that really put her on the map was called The Choice, yes, and then later The Gift. But The Choice sold over 1 million copies around the world. It was a bestseller and continues to sell. And she only published those when she was in her 90s. And that was really only when she was able to talk about her horrific experiences and to make public everything she had learned through the camps. What made her special as well, I think, is that, and of course, every single loss that we had in the Holocaust was tragic, but the stories that we can remember and that we can attach to have something to them. It can't just be ordinary people, which is as tragic as anyone else, but you need to have a kind of story to hang it around. And Edith Eger had that story because she was a gymnast, because she was on her way to the Olympics, because she had so much going for her that she lost.
And she danced for Mengele. I mean, stories the likes of which you think this has to be made up, this can't be for real, but all true. I want to just ask you, the fact that she only wrote it when she was 90, I mean, that is a remarkable fact in of itself. Was this her way of processing what it is she went through?
You know, I think that she used her story because she became a counselor and a psychologist, and she used the things that she learned in the camps and that she then applied to herself in her counseling practice and to help countless people heal, because clearly this was something that she had learned. I mean, if you ever listen to her speak in that beautifully accented English, she was Hungarian and she sounded Hungarian till mm-hmm. the day she died, really. And if you listen to her speak, she has a spark in her voice and her eyes, and you really can hear that. I think that writing a book is so incredibly vulnerable. There's a big difference between helping people in a therapy room,
yes,
and telling your story to the entire world. And perhaps she needed a different kind of courage to do that. And that's why she did it so late in her life.
You know, I can't help thinking about somebody like Primo Levi, who, we don't know why he committed suicide. But the theory is that the tragedy of what he went through once he had worked through it and written the books was just too big for him to deal with. And who knows? But here's a woman who had the exact opposite reaction to the experiences, these awful experiences.
She did. And this is something that she wrote that it kind of sticks in my mind. She says, I'm a psychologist, a mother, a grandmother, and a great grandmother, and an observer of my own and others' behavior, as well as an Auschwitz survivor. And I find it interesting she said that last. But I'm here to tell you that the worst prison is not the one the Nazis put me in. The worst prison is the one I built for myself.
Oh
And
my
that's the
goodness.
lesson that she then tries to teach all of us, that, you know, we have a choice to free ourselves from our own
Sounds very
shackles,
Viktor
boundaries.
Frankly, in a way.
Very.
I had
So
real
I
echoes of
think
this.
it really is. And I think what she did as well was she took Viktor Frankl's immense learning and teachings and she made it accessible, because she was so accessible and warm, and in a way that Viktor Frankl wasn't, although he changed the way we think forever. She made it come alive in a different way.
Again, I haven't read the books, but I've read about the books, and some of the critiques of the books are that she, well, not a critique, some of the commentary on the writings is that she was incredibly restrained. Some Holocaust memoirs are graphic and overwhelming. They're saying her writing felt somewhat different. Would you agree with a statement like that?
Simon, I don't know how you describe the experience of a Holocaust, and I
Fair
think
enough.
There's really a place for both. I think we do unfortunately need graphic details sometimes to get a sense of the horror. But you know, when she describes dancing in front of Mengele and being asked to pirouette, to perform, and she talks about how she hears the Blue Danube in the background, which was something, a dance she could do in her sleep, and she blocks the scary thoughts and she imagines the barracks floors becoming the stage in the Budapest Opera House and her prison garb becoming a sparkly tutu, and she imagines a hushed audience. And I think that that is also powerful, to create that world, knowing, and we all know the horror that she was actually in, and then this world that she imagines in order to survive it. So I think that that's as powerful as the graphic details.
This issue of the silence, I'm struggling to kind of come to terms with the fact that you would only get to deal with this issue so late in your 90s. You did say that she was sort of getting on with living, trying to rebuild a life. But boy, oh boy, did she then embrace it. She even went back to Auschwitz. I mean, this wasn't a woman who was afraid to look inwards.
Yeah, she. I think also she felt, which I and this we know from various survivors, that there came a point where they understood that if they did not speak about it, that it was going to be a story lost forever. And that enormous responsibility, sure, I can't imagine carrying that kind of responsibility, but it became absolutely imperative that you tell the story, because it would have gotten lost.
I'm so upset that we're having this conversation, which should have been time specific, and we shouldn't be comparing it to anything happening again now. And yet Eli Sharabi's just come out with a memoir of his time under the ground in Hamas tunnels. And it seems to me that there's a certain kind of person who just can go to hell and back and come out maintaining their humanity. It almost, I'm beginning to wonder if it isn't some kind of a theme within Jewish literature, that this is what we write about. I wish we didn't have to, but it's what we do. Have you read his book? Do you see any similarities between what he's saying and what she's saying?
Simon, it's an interesting question, because, and it relates to what you discussed earlier, she spent a good, 60 years holding on to her story before she put it to paper. And Eli Sharabi has written his story, months after his experience? And I think there's a different process here. What Eli Sharabi is doing is bearing witness, as opposed to telling a story of Jewish history. For Edith Eger, she was telling a story in order to impart everything she'd learned and kind of send a message to her children, her grandchildren, all the Jewish people and people, humanity in general, on what it is to live a good life and how to approach life with vigor, no matter what, no matter your loss, no matter your pain. Eli Sharabi Wow, he is in such a different place, and I think we also live in a different time. I'm sure he feels or felt the weight of responsibility to bear witness to what happens. And I think as us as the readers, as those consuming the stories, we also have a need to bear witness. After the Holocaust, there wasn't that. They just got on with surviving, and in fact, many of them never spoke about it. I know
Yes,
my grandfather
100%.
never spoke about it. It was swallowed. It was such a different time. But now we understand the importance of a kind of shared experience, and we understand that this is unfortunately a shared Jewish experience across space and time.
And again, this is just a comment. I don't expect you to say anything about it. It's just that it forces you to ask the most basic and fundamental questions about yourself. You know, how would I have reacted? Do I have her mettle? Would I
Indeed.
have come out the way she
Oh.
did? I mean, I hate to say it. I don't think I'm that person. I wish I was. I just don't
I
think I
don't
am.
think I am. I don't think I am either, Simon. I don't think that I would have been able to find that kind of
Remarkable.
mental, emotional, spiritual strength. But probably if you had asked her when she was 16, she would have said the same.
So, just in terms of winding this up then this afternoon, her legacy is what?
For me, Simon, and I know that we feel differently about books, but there is nothing like having a book on the shelf of this woman, either the choice or the gift. But I think the choice is the strongest because it also just captures her experience, and that is the legacy of books. That's what books can do. They can capture a story, and of course, they're recordings, and it is, as I say, wonderful to listen to her voice and to listen to her speak. But I think that legacy is that she has left these stories as well as her learnings, and they're going to endure long after, when now that she's left us, we're still going to be able to engage and listen to her stories and feel her what she gained.
Batya Brekker, I'm so very grateful that you made time to talk to us this afternoon. As we said, an important person, the passing of somebody who made such a difference. Thank you for your contribution.